you can hear me. Oh, there I am. Hello. The Italians have an expression. Maybe you've seen it. It's this motion of kissing your fingers and just like kind of letting it explode into the air in front of you. Tourists often overuse this expression, but the Italians use it to mean wonderful or delightful or something just like just really nice. Could be compared to perhaps kissing your fingers and throwing it up into the sky, blowing kisses. My name is Swan, and I'm blowing kisses from the basement of the Velo Bike Shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Ink and Worm, all things reading and writing. Thanks for tuning in. We still got a little bit of music jam going on. I'm really excited for my guest today because he's my friend and confidant and just a cool guy. And very literary guy as well. Lawrence is back.
Hello.
Back and better than ever. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm also wonderful. It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon. I mean, it's hard to go outside when it's so sunny and pleasant and not, like, have some hope for things to come are going to be okay.
Yeah.
I have hope. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a positive day.
Thanks for making the trek. It's like a... It is a trek for you, so I appreciate your sacrifice.
I mean, it's an honor to be here. I was on the bus for a little while. There was a lady who sprayed some perfumey stuff
on
the bus. I was like, what
are
you
really
doing?
I have a really hard time with artificial smells, I'll be honest. And I don't... It's funny because I grew up... And this is a story time, I guess, already. I grew up with my grandfather actually being really sensitive to smells. So anytime we were going to... visit my grandparents, it was like, don't spray anything, don't wear anything, because it will make him have this reaction.
Right.
And it was funny because as a teenager, like with all like the pee spray, like I don't even remember what my favorite one was. It was like really sweet.
Wait, did you just say pee spray?
Sweet pee, I think.
Yep,
sweet pee. They're different.
Yep,
mm-hmm. Like, I loved smelling, like, split pea soup was my favorite. No. Sweet pea was like my scent of choice, and every time we went there, I was like, oh, I can't, but what about, And now I'm so sensitive that, yeah, if like someone sits next to me on the subway and they've like got any smells, I'm just like, never mind, I stand up and leave, like I can't handle it. What is that about?
I don't even have the sense of smell. I can't even really smell the smell. I just, on principle...
In a public space. That's not the time to spray yourself.
And she sprayed the man sitting in front of her and then apologized to the man. But still, I was.
There's some, you know, I can respect wanting to smell good.
Yeah.
And I'm all about, like, if you have some serious BO, like, yeah, like, whatever, make it a more pleasant place for everyone else involved. But
that's
kind of a lot.
Yeah.
And you're kind of in an enclosed space.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't use any scents. I do. Lately, I have gotten into actually this coconut oil blend with cardamom and cinnamon. But it's really subtle.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I will just, whenever I use coconut oil for all my cooking. So whenever I have a little
extra. You spill some and you're like, cool.
Moisturizer. Excellent.
Totally. Which is funny because I don't actually love coconuts like in general, but coconut oil is the shit.
It's great.
It's so great.
It's awesome.
And it also has, what is it, like MTC, something that your brain needs to function properly.
It does. It's good for your brain.
It's good for your brain. So if you haven't incorporated coconut oil into your life.
Do it.
Experiment. You know, everybody's different.
Yeah.
Everybody's different. Did you get that?
I did.
Cool. I'm glad you're catching my jokes because that's cool. Anyways, so I want to turn the time over to you because you had an idea because of an event happening next week.
There's something coming up very soon.
Something's happening. Tell me about it because I'm oblivious.
It is that time of year again. It is time for the celebration of Passover, which is one of the most important days in the Jewish year. It celebrates the exodus of the Jews from slavery in Egypt. And oftentimes, in my family at least, it's marked by, I mean, it's a celebration. It's kind of a drinking game if you really get down to it. And also, just in terms of what we're talking about here today, it also is really interesting because it's text-based, right? It's a holiday in which the main event is the Seder. Seder means order. And the order of the Seder is determined by the Haggadah, which is the book that you all collectively read from. Everybody gets their own copy, and you work your way through this book during the meal. And I just think if we're talking about texts, is really interesting.
How long is the book?
Yeah. The book, I mean, different lengths. The one that we use is about maybe 35, 45 pages.
Oh, okay.
But because we're creative Jews, we skip some pages.
Because creativity allows you to skip.
Exactly. And also,
we embellish.
We have fun with it. We kind of go a little bit wild. It's almost a contest. I remember realizing about maybe 15 years ago, just to give you a sense of how old I am, that most of my family viewed this as an occasion to have a comedy contest and see who could be the funniest. It's often my Aunt Alice. Sometimes it's my cousin Daniel. He's pretty good too. But we'll tell the story. You know, a big part of the Seder, a big part of the Haggadah is actually telling the story, or retelling the story of what happened during the Exodus. And as we tell this story, we will pass along the story. And we've started to do that bump thing. You ever do that when you're telling a story? So you have a text and you start reading, and then all of a sudden in the middle of a sentence you say bump. And you shout out somebody's name, and they have to start from right where
that
you
reminds
ended.
Reminds me of middle school.
Exactly. That's kind of what we're going for.
You're like, stay on your toes, pay attention.
Exactly.
Pay attention. Yeah. Yeah, nice.
Exactly. But I just think I think it's super interesting. And I've always I'm not a very very religious person. And I don't necessarily, religion's a hot topic. We can not necessarily get into the religious aspects of it. But I've always been really interested in the texts involved, and whether it be the Torah or the Haggadah, these different texts always really spoke to me. And I just think it's fascinating that you put three Jews in a room, you have seven different opinions, right?
Wait.
Mathematically impossible, you would think. Seven opinions.
Where did the other four come from?
Who knows?
Okay, that helps me understand some things in life.
It's a very we're an argumentative people.
And I'm so not. You start arguing with me, and I'm like, okay, you win. I give up.
Right. So it's just, it's fascinating. So I grew up in the Reform movement, which is as I understand it, the three main kind of branches of Judaism: Orthodox, Conservative, Reform. Reform being the most liberal.
Yes, which most people are these days. Is that do the numbers match up with that? Is that like a thing, like most Jews are Reformed, or is it still really
I don't know. That's hard to say. I mean, living in New York City, there's definitely large populations of very conservative and very Orthodox in the city. Yeah. I think a lot of people who might be classified in the Reform movement consider themselves even past that as cultural Jews nowadays.
Yeah, cultural Jews is a thing, or people talking about Jew-ish with quotation marks
exactly.
around the ish.
Yeah.
Like, very ish, but it's a part of me, which I can appreciate. Like, yes, it's where I'm coming from, but it's also not my life.
Yeah. And I personally, the part that I carry with me really does involve these texts. And I think the Haggadah is a wonderful thing. The act of collective storytelling, I think, is so foundational to the way we build culture, to the way we build our societies. And really the essence of culture often is stories that we have in common. And I think this is a great example of a story that we have in common. It's also really interesting because people have taken the story and, there's an Orthodox Haggadah, there's conservative Haggadahs, there's liberal ones, right? There's Reform ones. There's kind of one for each different sect. But then there's also more recent political movements that have also kind of made their own Haggadahs, right? So there's a feminist Haggadah. There's ones that make the connection between Jewish slavery and African slavery. There are There's a couple of them in the collection that my family uses that were purchased, I believe, sometime in the 1980s because they speak very directly towards the plight of Soviet Jewry. And there's a nice little picture of the Kremlin on one of these pages. And we always look at that like, oh, huh, look at that. These Haggadahs are 25 years old. Maybe we should get some new ones.
So much here that I'm just like, I have no idea. I have no idea, but I wish. I mean, part of me, like, I wish I do, but I don't. I'm coming from a different background. But it is interesting because, you know, let's talk about religion. That's like a thing that has to do with books and words.
Somebody sound some alarms, klaxons.
No.
Religion.
We're all right.
So, I mean, yeah, you. I mean, we have different,
we have different backgrounds. But there's parallels. I mean, I mentioned before I come from Mormonism, and for a long time I was really reactive to anything even remotely related to that. And I was just like, nope, no thank you. And lately I've been asking this question of, okay, like, my spiritual self is a little bit lacking, and I'm not quite sure what that means or how it incorporates into my life in the grander scheme of things. But I do feel like I should have something like structured into my life that helps feed my spiritual self, if you will. And so I've been exploring, and I actually went to a symposium, and that was my question, was like, how does one incorporate spirituality, or is it even possible to incorporate spirituality without incorporating religion? And this is something that I'm like toying with, and I'm doing a lot of writing and meditation, which is like, yes, that's introspective, but also is a tradition that dates back a long time, and in order to learn from the masters, it seems to be rooted in religion. So that's something that I've been exploring with myself. And
would you say that do you think you're looking for spirituality? Because to me, it's almost even divorced from that too. It's a little bit more about community. To me,
absolutely community, and that's the thing that, if you're part of a religious order or religious anything and you leave it, all of a sudden, like, for me, that experience was really dramatic of, like, I'm not Mormon anymore. And then all of a sudden I didn't have friends that I could talk to.
I'd like to say I could imagine what that's like, but I can't.
And maybe that was me making it up of, like, oh, when I hang out with this person, all they want to talk to is about how come I'm not doing the things that I need to be doing. And I remember this instance of my stepmom, like, hugging me and crying. And she's just like, we just care about you so much. And it's like almost like my soul had already been lost.
Yeah.
And in that conversation, she was like, oh, so you're not Mormon anymore. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to play that game anymore. And she's like, it's not a game.
Whoa.
Like, because it's not. If you buy into that, it's not a game. It's your eternal soul, which is a big deal. I get it. But I was like, there's just too much discrepancies. There's too much. It's like a relationship.
Yeah.
You talk about community, it's about relationships. And you want to feed into the relationships that are healthy, that are feeding you, that are making you feel more light in your life. And so that kind of became the shift. And I've been doing well at that. I was like invested in friendships and invested in projects that added light. And that was really nice. And now I'm in this place where I moved to Brooklyn about a year ago, and I've been trying to, like, find that community here, which has just also, like, created, like, pauses for questioning of,
what,
like...
Yeah. What about yoga? Have you...
I haven't found a yoga community here. I am poor.
Yeah. Hey, cheers.
If you go to a yoga studio, they don't offer free first class.
No.
And sometimes they want you to pay $20. To go to a class. However, and this is like my own like slap of the hand, there's multiple donation based classes.
Yeah.
And this, you know, I taught yoga for a while, and that was something that I said at the beginning of my class. I was like, congratulations, you showed up. That's the hardest part, is like just like getting
showing
to
up.
Class.
Yeah.
Show up.
Yeah.
So I haven't been doing that, which is like maybe something I can explore again. I found community through the co-op.
Okay.
I joined a co-op and I met some people through there in Park Slope
Food Co-op?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was really nice. I found community through climbing.
Okay.
Because people that climb on rocks usually can share
Where do you climb?
Not consistently, but occasionally at Brooklyn Boulders.
Okay.
Yeah. I found community through, like, friends of friends. So mm-hmm. I was, when I first moved here, I moved here with friends, and then they quickly, like, decided that New York wasn't working for them and asked me to move out, and then they moved back to Portland.
Right.
So I was living with this woman, and she was in, like, the theater community, mm-hmm. so I have a couple of friends from just going to events with her. But, yeah, community, I think, is what it's rooted in. I agree with you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, I mean, so I'm curious to know, just in terms of, so in terms of Passover, right, it's really, the appeal to me is that it's about this text, and I will admit to a whole lot of ignorance when it comes to your background and texts particularly.
The scriptures, we have the Bible, and we have a complementary text, which maybe might offend people to say it's complementary, but it's like, in addition to the Bible, there's this other text that God had in the New World that we use. Yeah.
The Book of Moroni?
The Book of Mormon.
Book of Mormon?
But Moroni is Moroni's really
the
cool.
angel?
Moroni.
Moroni?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's how it's pronounced, but Moroni's cool too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I think that who knows? It's like Sanskrit. It's like, it's drishti, not drishti.
Yeah.
Or like whatever, like you don't know.
It's in another language.
Or like, it's chakra or chakra, like... were you there?
Right.
Do you know how they said it?
Do you?
You in a former life, it's been revealed to me from my former life that it's chakra and not chakra. Like, who knows?
So what was the relationship, I mean, of the kind of practice to that book? Because, I mean, just in terms of, so I was, you know, as a reformed Jew, it's getting heavy.
Brace yourself.
So every week, every weekend was kind of like we would read a part of the scripture. Is that, I mean, is there constant visiting of scripture? Is that part of it?
Yes.
I'm honestly curious.
It's highly encouraged. And this is the interesting piece. I was talking to you a little bit about how I kind of played mom a lot mm-hmm. of my childhood.
Yeah.
Either by taking care of my father or by taking care of my mother and my other siblings. And bless their hearts, they did the best they could. And we have to give them credit for what they did. Like, you know, you can only operate in the capacity that you have. But that was my game, actually. It was like, okay, children, fellow siblings, let's read the scriptures together. And we'd sit and read.
Interesting.
So I think that that's where the parallels come in of like religions definitely have parallels in terms of like the practices that build community.
And I think so the kind of where I'm going with this in my mind is that you know, I wonder if that function of shared texts fostering community, I don't even wonder, I'm sure that it also operates separate from the religious
context,
right?
I mean, even just the act of singing and dancing together. I remember when right after I moved here, I went to, I don't think it was a Shabbat. It was like a Tuesday or Thursday night. But I went in and they talked about this story from the Bible. Gosh, it was almost a year ago, so I don't recall the details because I'm like that. Anyways, as I was sitting there was just like this wave of like, oh, wow, I'm feeling things. And then they're like, and now we're going to get up and celebrate like the Jews did. And there's that like, la, 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 la. Mm-hmm. And like just getting up and dancing and singing and like shouting with these people. I was like, this is a powerful experience. This pisses me off that this is a powerful experience just because it's rooted in these archetypal stories that we've been raised with. And yet here I am like basking in the power that is in singing and dancing with a group of people who you've just like shared this like revisiting of a story with.
Yeah,
like, let's talk about this story and then let's like feel the joy that these people felt. And you're like, shit, this is real. Damn it.
I think, and there's also tons, like even if you go away from scripture for a second or text for a second, there's tons of those common cultural elements that operate really kind of almost separate from that other sphere in terms of whether it's food. I mean, for me, this Passover weekend, in addition to being marked by the reading of the Haggadah and the participation in the Seder, is also going to be marked. I mean, the Seder is a meal. It's a ritual meal, which has certain elements which are repeated every year. So at some point next weekend, I'm going to be sitting with one of these wooden bowls, one of those little choppers, and I'm going to be chopping the nuts for the harosis, right? I'm going to be chopping the apples, pouring the wine in. ritual food, matzah, right? Matzah is the food of Passover. So there's all these ways in which these rituals kind of you know, they bring you in and they make a community. I mean, so, and one of the things that we do too is there's a couple generations in my family, and about 15 to 20, maybe 25 of us get together at all these holidays. And, you know, the one generation will find their way to the one kind of floor, and then the younger kids go into the basement. We got a couple beers, we got some wine, we're having a great time.
That is one thing that is incorporated into the Jewish religion that was not incorporated into Mormonism is alcohol.
Yeah.
The inebriator. we didn't encourage that at all. And it was more like, here's a 7-Up. And you're like, ooh, there's so much sugar in that.
Ooh. Have you ever, you've never been to a Passover Seder?
No.
Never ever?
No.
Well, I mean, if you're not busy next weekend, you can come, although you do have this show to do on next Sunday.
Yeah, I have responsibilities.
You got responsibilities, yeah, as Angelica used to say.
A grown-up. Sometimes, so, on Sundays, right, at 2 p.m.
part of the Seder is, you know, wine is very important to Judaism. There's a special blessing.
Like every Shabbat, you, like, have your wine. And
you have,
like,
the wine.
Well, and let me just, like, I'm maybe socially ignorant, so hopefully this isn't, like, superfluous.
I'm definitely socially ignorant. So.
But with the family I lived with, we would do this nice little, and this is, like, the community building thing. So, so we would get together and we'd be like, here's some, like, cool things for my week. Here's some things I'm praying for and thinking about. And then, like, you kind of, like, shake off and, like, physically or spiritually cleanse the week from your body. And then you do the prayer and then you, like, Shabbat. And then you have your wine.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, like, can go wherever it needs to go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bore Peri Hagafen. Yeah. So it was a Jewish family you were staying with.
Yeah.
This is in Park Slope?
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Interesting. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah.
Did they light candles?
Yeah.
And say the prayers of the candles? Yep. To put the hands over the eyes?
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
Some of them did, not everyone.
Yeah, that's not something
that's
I grew up,
like,
with.
Like, different degrees of, like, practice. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
In the Passover Seder, there is, I mean, it's literally an instruction manual for a meal. And there's a point at which it says, pour a glass of wine. And then it says, drink your wine. It says, pour another glass of wine. Drink the wine. By the end of the meal, you're supposed to have consumed a couple glasses of wine. It's fantastic.
Oh, did you? I posted this thing recently of, like, here's a picture of someone before wine. Here's after one glass. Here's after two glasses. And they look so happy after their third glass of wine. And I'm like, I should drink more wine.
If only.
Drinking beer right now. It's like a nice placebo.
Cheers.
It does the job as well, I think. Nice beer.
Yeah, it's gluten-free beer.
Yeah, it's gluten-free. Apparently, also, my friend from Utah posted an article a couple years back about how IPAs, the hops in IPAs, produce man boobs over time.
What?
Yeah. What? Sorry to tell you, but it might be, like, it might be the relation. You're like, set it down. I can find it really fast. But just the hops, like, if consumed in excess over time, will produce man boobs because they, like, reset hormones. So it's actually, like, the IPA is, like, the woman's drink in a sense.
Well,
just like traditional herbal mem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you know where it comes from, though? IPAs?
No.
So do you know what IPA stands for?
India Pale Ale.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it comes from hops.
Well, the reason that it's so hopsy is because in the, I guess, somewhere in the earlier era of exploration and colonization, the English and the Dutch were going out to called the Indies, right? India, Java, Sumatra, all those places. Right? Yeah. And they drank beer. Oftentimes they drank beer because they didn't have a source of fresh water, but they noticed that their beer was actually spoiling on these long trips to the other side of the world. So they realized that the way that they were going to make it last was by adding extra hops into the beer while it was already ready. It was already like beer, and they would add hops into it, which would keep it from spoiling on their trips. It also gave it that really intense hopsy flavor. But
which
that's where
nice.
India Pale Ale comes from our early experiences as colonizers. So maybe it's a kind of loaded thing.
Perhaps.
Perhaps, but, you know.
you know.
I like it.
I like it as well. Yeah. I was going to say, I was going to look for this article by my friend and read it without permission, but of course I'm going to cite it in the notes, but I'm also like doing a quick search to find it.
Yeah.
But she talks a lot about like medicinal brewing and how, you know, talking about mead.
Mead.
Yeah, honey-based alcohol.
Honey wine.
Honey wine. Talking about mead and talking about other herbs that are used to like ferment and brew. And like, we don't ferment a lot of things in this day and age, I feel like, in comparison to what like maybe Middle Ages, like fermentation was the shit.
Well, because nobody could have fresh water, right?
Right.
And they would die.
Yeah, you had to like figure out another way. I actually was looking this morning at this fermented cod liver oil that's supposedly really good for you.
Sorry, it probably didn't sound so nice on the radio.
You know, if it's so bad, I can always edit it out. But I mean, essentially, like it traced back to that time of like we used to ferment things, and here's this old practice that's really good for you health wise. Not only is it oils, but it's oils that have like these active cultures in them.
Mm.
Yeah, and I'm always trying to find interesting ways to eat less because my metabolism is so high that I'm always hungry. So when I find things that like satiate, I'm like, yeah, incorporate that into my diet. So I was curious to try this fermented cod liver oil and be like, would that like make me feel like more human?
Interesting. Probably has lots of omega fatty acids in it.
Yeah. Right? And they also offer escape. So,
not that this has any relevance to anything, but I made some really great quinoa crusted cod the other day.
Quinoa crusted, like instead of like the wheat batter, it
had flour, then egg, then quinoa that was already cooked, and it was fantastic.
It turned out well. Egg, flour, quinoa.
Flour, egg, quinoa. Yeah, seasoned at every step of the way.
With what seasonings?
Just salt and pepper. Don't go too crazy. Maybe some herbs in the quinoa.
You have become quite the chef in the past few months.
So when I was on your show previously, we talked a lot about science fiction. We talked a lot about Star Wars.
And your projects, which are still totally current and relevant. Right? And we can talk about that when we're done talking about religion and beer.
Absolutely. but that is my other kind of fantasy, is to become a celebrity chef. I don't want to be a restaurant chef.
Like
I don't want to cook professionally.
Chef? A home celebrity chef?
I want to have a show. I want to be like Bobby Flay. No, I want to be like Alton Brown, actually. He's my favorite.
So, like, produce a YouTube show that gets picked up by a network?
Yeah, maybe. I think it'd be really good. I've been told that I'm fairly good at explaining my cooking methods as I'm doing them, and I think I could rock out at that.
My default, this is like coming from years of not feeding myself well. I think through college there was like a total like 6 months where I literally lived off of nutrition drinks and like protein bars. It was a dark time. And then I was like, oh yeah, fresh vegetables should be the majority of what you eat. Interesting. So I've gotten really back to like simplistic cooking. A lot of times I'll just like make a couple things and like that's all it is with salt. Like salt.
Yeah.
I even stopped using pepper, which is really funny because I'll have people over for dinner and they'll be like, where's your pepper? And I'm like, I have red pepper flakes. Like, I have salt. I have molasses. Oh, that's not going
to
work.
Well, to like, I guess bring it halfway back to texts and reading and writing for a second. Are you a recipe follower? Do you read cookbooks?
I'm not.
No?
I'm kind of stuck in my mode. I have a default dish that's kind of a one-pot wonder.
Okay.
You throw some salad, some nice greens in the bottom, either chard or spinach is my favorite. Okay. Swiss chard or spinach. Sometimes you can like fry up some collards. You throw some shit on it.
Throw some shit on it. Yeah.
Because
hopefully not.
You can drink your own pee, but I don't recommend eating your own shit. unless it's metaphorical.
Definitely not. Right. Except for the metaphorical.
Except metaphorical. Definitely. You're like, let me eat that. Yeah. Oh, shit. anyways, so sometimes I'll find something starchy like potatoes or rice, and then a protein, either meat or beans, and then some veggies. I love squash. I love Brussels sprouts.
And then
I'll like throw an egg on it with some seeds, like pumpkin seeds or sunflower seeds, and that's kind of like my one pot wonder. Sometimes I'll do like lemon and vinegar, lemon and oil. Yeah, that's like my like default meal.
Awesome. We should host a cooking show together.
That's my only thing to offer. That and I make a really badass tea, and I'm really good at making coffee.
Yeah. Well, that's how we met, because of tea.
We did meet because of tea, but we also met because of tea that incorporates a lot of soy.
Wait, what do you mean?
Doesn't the company you used to work for incorporate soy lecithin as an emulsifier? An emulsifier. I don't know.
Do they? They probably do. They're
probably. Soy's super... Here's my thing. I'm really sensitive to soy, so I'm like hyper aware of it. And I would notice if I got tea from the company you worked for, which we will go unnamed, I didn't feel so great after a while. So I was like, oh, there must be some soy in there somewhere. It's like what my conclusion was drawn.
That might be true.
All like speculative. You don't even know you worked there.
I really don't remember. I've put it in my past.
So my friend, my dear beloved friend, Raquel Smith Callis, wrote this article, IPAs are giving you man boobs. And she says, not many people know this, but those hops in your favorite IPAs are actually wonderful medicine for insomnia and menopause, thanks to their high phytoestrogen content. These same phytoestrogens, however, might be less desirable for men, as indicated by the common condition known among brewers as brewer's droop. Oh, God, I think I have man boobs. I'm just kidding. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Something very strange has happened.
I have boobs.
I mean, if there was a camera in the studio, it would be super inappropriate right now.
We're both grabbing our chests.
Yeah. I think I'm okay.
I think I'm okay, too.
I think I'm okay.
But I think that applies more to people who are different body shapes. So we've both got our like genes working for us on this.
I suppose I have to eat all the time.
Yeah. High metabolism. Let me tell you, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Sure, you look thin. You're always hungry.
People are cry me a river.
And I get so crabby. Like if I haven't eaten for a while, I'm like, I don't care. Whatever. Fuck everything. I don't care. And people are like, are you hungry? I'm like, oh, I don't even care. I can't even think about food anymore. And they're like, just eat this piece of chicken. And I'm like, I feel better. Like, I literally sometimes cannot even cognitively process or function because I'm so hungry. I'm not hungry anymore, but my body's just like, bah!
Yeah. You know what? You know, one of the things I absolutely cannot do if I'm hungry in the slightest is write.
Make decisions about food?
No, is write. Oh. Is write. I can't write.
I usually need to be full to write.
I feel like it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? It's you need to kind of take care of the basic stuff.
Eat, drink, pee, write.
Have shelter, and then you can write.
Oh, here's my new trick. I was telling you about it. My new trick for writing, or like quote-unquote tricking myself into writing, is I've been emailing my friend every morning. So every morning I'll just be like, blah, 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 and like a random, who knows, disjointed, maybe it's 2 lines, maybe it's 500 lines. Yeah. Just like send him an email.
Yeah.
And then he does the same for me every night. And there's no feedback. There's no critique. There's no criticism. There's no like anything. All we can say is thank you. And this week it worked. I was talking to another friend who's like, yeah, that didn't work for me. But right now it's working because throughout the day I have these things like I can throw this out there and have a completely space to just like put the words on the page and like hit send. It's kind of this strange empowering. It's working for me right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
I have to trick myself to write.
I was telling you about the way that I get to write right now. So I just recently started working with a company called Yonster, and I'm hoping everybody who's listening right now goes and looks this up, because that would be me doing my job as a marketing person for this company. But essentially, Yonster is a professional social network for 14 to 24-year-olds, where 14 to 24-year-olds can find opportunities for employment. They can prepare for opportunities for employment. Nonprofits and educators can increase their impact and the reach of their programs. And then also employers can actually find qualified
employees.
We like to say that we're, instead of competing with them, we're kind of completing their model, because really it...
You're feeding people into their system.
Hopefully one day maybe they'd be interested in making some sort of partnership with us. But yeah, the idea is that we're going to really serve this market that is underserved by professional social networking. So what I'm doing with them, I get to write informative blog posts for this target audience. I get to work on some marketing language. And it's as a writer, it's very interesting to be in a professional writing setting where I don't hate myself for doing it, right?
That has a lot of value.
Yeah, it really does.
Actually. Actually.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's some good stuff.
Good job. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like that one thing of like, if you write for a living, you get burnt out on writing and you stop writing for yourself. But I also think that in this day and age, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, it's, you have to have a day job to be a writer. You have to have something supporting your writing.
Absolutely.
And especially initially, like, writing is your baby. You got to take care of it. You don't have to demand anything from it.
Right.
It's just there and you're just nurturing.
Yeah. No, and it's the thing that you do the other thing so you can get a chance
to do the thing.
To do,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't know if maybe we could talk about my the thing I'm doing, the other
Let's
thing
talk
that
about
I'm doing
your thing.
For a little bit.
Pause. This is Ink and Worm. If you've just tuned in, you can catch the podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Audioboom. Please send us a review. Let us know what you think. And I'm also on all the socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Yeah. Please tell us about your thing.
Well, first let me say, too, you should subscribe to Ink and Worm, too.
Subscribe. Then it'll just populate.
So I'm hoping, as we talk about this project, so I am myself working on a podcast, and I'm hoping to actually maybe do a premiere on your show, if that would work out for you at some point.
I think that could work out.
Episodes are going to be about 15 to 20 minutes long a piece, and basically, I don't know if you ever listened to Serial, the Serial podcast.
I did, after you recommended it so highly, and
what? Did you listen to just the first season, second season two?
I haven't gotten through the first season yet.
But the first season's way more interesting.
What?
Right? It's so good. It is so well written, so well delivered. It's just fantastic. I discovered Serial probably a year or two after most of the world did, but I fell in love with
it. I'm always late jumping on those bandwagons. You know, I'm like, remember this thing from 2007? People were like, yeah, I
you know, I heard
it
of this
in
new band.
2007.
Right? They're called the Spice Girls. Like, I don't
oh
know
my
if
God,
ever...
I love the Spice Girls. You knew that. You baited me. You baited me.
I'm no, good like no. that.
Okay, carry on.
So I was listening to Serial. I listened to the entire thing over the span of probably 3 or 4 days. Was super impressed. Thought it was great writing. Super intriguing. And started to try to find other... That was really kind of my first entree into listening to podcasts. And I tried to find other things that I found interesting that I wanted to listen to. A couple months later, I found them, but at the time, I was kind of struggling to find anything that was nearly as interesting to me as Serial. So I feel like I had an inventor kind of thought, right? Where I was like,
let me make what I want
let
to
me
listen
make,
to.
Right? Let me make this. Let me make it instead. But I'm not an investigative journalist. I'm not a reporter. I wasn't about to go out there and find an actual case that I was going to research, although I think maybe I could if I wanted to, but maybe. So I was thinking about some of the stuff that I'd written, and I wanted to maybe take something. I wanted to write a podcast. I wanted to deliver and create a podcast that was had the element of mystery and investigation and crime that Serial did. But I didn't want it. I didn't want it to be nonfiction. I wanted to make it fiction. So then I started to think about my back catalog of short stories that I had written, and I realized that I had created a kind of private detective character previously. I'd already had a character ready and primed to go. I had a whole story ready and primed to become a podcast. So that's what I'm working on right now. It's like me, you know, if you recognize me, if listeners, if you recognize me from previous podcasts,
yeah.
I'm the sci-fi nerd.
Yay!
Yeah!
Resident sci-fi nerd!
Hells yeah! So, obviously, I had to make it a little bit science fiction-y. So, basically, what I'm working on is I guess you can call it a mini-series. I don't know, 4 or 5 parts, short episodes. the story of this one private detective, a private investigator, I guess you would call him. Inspector Pynchon is his name in my mind. Pynchon being a very distinct nod to Thomas Pynchon. Thomas Pynchon?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I got the first. Yep.
Gravity's Rainbow.
There you go.
And
Crying a Lot 49.
Wait, what's like the most difficult book to get through? Is that Gravity's Rainbow? Is that a different book?
I think, I don't know. The Crying a Lot 49 is the only one that I've read.
I don't remember. But I feel like there is like this reputation that he's written the most difficult novel mm-hmm. to get through.
For sure. Nod right there. And, you know, what I'm really trying to accomplish is creating a detective story that really, really sounds and feels like a noir tale from a couple decades ago. Very kind of classic feeling, classic tropes. My character is not the best person, is got his weaknesses, a little fond of the drink, a little fond of the sex, a little fond of the...
Who isn't?
Right?
It is Gravity's Rainbow. P.S.
Gotcha. Awesome. And yeah, it follows the story of this inspector being interrupted in the middle of a tryst, having been on his way back from his previous case, and he gets accosted virtually by kind of a message by a very, very, very rich fellow who wants him to come out to his private space yacht to figure out who stole his very old piece of computer. And then it goes from there, and there's sex, and there's drugs, and there's cigars, and there's space travel, and I just think it's really exciting.
And you've also had a role in casting this, and you initially offered a part to me that was really sexy.
Oh, you're going
to
bring this up?
Yeah, I am going to bring this up.
Oh, gosh.
No, I have no hard feelings, because I think this is how you have to defend your art, because you were like, yeah, you can be the sexy character, and then you met this person who is sexy.
Just a voice. She's
Her
a voice.
Her voice was that voice.
She's a voice actress, and too, professionally, too.
Totally, and I'm just here, like, goofing around, and then you're like, well, how about you be this other character? And I was like, meh. Dumb. I want to be the sexy chick. But then I did some readings for the other character, and I'm like, oh, this is fun too.
She's totally fun. And because...
And I think I fleshed her out for you. She became more real because of that reading. You were like,
absolutely.
Well, she could do this, and she could have a little bit more depth and maybe a little bit more emotional, less emotional, different points.
Absolutely. And I mean, specifically, the change that was specifically made was to kind of make her, instead of being a passive character... Kind of making her an active part of a conspiracy.
I empowered her.
Yeah. No, you did. I mean, it's true. It's very true.
So I'm excited for this thing to happen.
Yeah.
And we can talk about the timeline. And I'm also absolutely willing to let this happen on my show, because I am intrigued.
It's going to be awesome. I'm also really, just the last thing I'll say about it is that I'm very interested in, as a writer, always interested in framing and the idea of... I don't like just kind of writing a story. I want it to be understood in a certain way, whether it be a letter from somebody to somebody else, or somebody's notes on something, or a transcript of a conversation that happens. I always like to frame whatever I write in a certain way. So all I'll say is that this podcast, as a recording, is framed not only... It's framed in the universe in which it takes place. So I would like the beginning kind of promos. You always hear these advertisements during the beginnings of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I want those advertisements to be for things that exist only in this fake world that I've made up, right? And then...
Do you have an example?
What was it? Space Slug Energy Drink or something?
Space
was
going to
be one
Wait,
of the...
Slug?
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Like a bullet to your brain?
No, like Space Slug, like from Star Wars. Like in Empire, when they're in the asteroid field and they land in the asteroid, and the Space Slug almost eats them. Yeah, it happens.
So
you'll have to trust me.
Space Slug induces feelings of terror that will get you moving toward your...
Space Slug Zombie Status was the name of it, actually, now that I think.
It will, motivate you to act.
Yeah. And then...
Because you'll be like, endorphins, fight or flight, shit.
Right?
If you work well under pressure, Space Slug... What is it called? Zombie?
Space Slug Zombie Status.
Space slug zombie.
But I feel
status.
Like the commercial needs to have like, like, yeah, exactly. You understand. But also the other frame is I was kind of like, you know, why would this inspector character be narrating this experience? I don't want it to just be that, you know, that's my authorial conceit that he is doing it. That plays into the story why he is actually narrating that experience, and that is kind of key to the story, and will come, all will be made clear.
And then you're like,
what?
I do want to revisit something you said earlier. So when you first like conceptually, your phone is so busy. Yeah, I'm jealous. I have one thing, and that's something that I did. So you mentioned like, I was thinking about this and I like remembered I wrote this short story with a detective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's curious because I've been writing a lot of short stories lately. And then all of a sudden I realized like, wait, I could put these in an order and in theory have a bigger story.
Absolutely.
So it was interesting for me to see that all the short stories I've been writing over the past 2 years are kind of part of this fluid narrative and that I can just tie them together. And that was really weird. Last week I was like, holy shit, I've been writing about the same character, or theoretically this like could have been the same person, and these are just like events in her life.
Have you ever read Jesus's Son?
No, it's been recommended. It's on my list. I think there's multiple Jesus's sons.
Oh man, what is his name? They made a movie out of it. Billy Crudup was in it. Did we not? We've talked about this before.
Made a movie out of it. Billy Crudup. And Allison McLean and Robert Michael Kelly.
Oh, and what's her name? The Redhead, too, was in that movie.
I don't see the Redhead.
Anyway.
Oh, that's the writers. Excuse me.
But that to me, is one of that collection, Jesus' Son, to me is a great example of that kind
Who's
of writing.
Who's the redhead? Samantha Morton?
No. Oh, man. She was
Lewis?
She was on 30 Rock for a couple episodes. She was Jack Donaghy's old Boston girlfriend.
Oh. What's her name? Oh, no.
We will forever be stymied in this search.
What's her name?
I feel like it's Kathleen or Catherine something. That might be completely wrong.
She was in this movie. She's got to be on this
list. She was in that movie.
What was her character in this movie?
Oh, man. I really can barely remember at this point.
Well, it sounds like we should watch this movie and do some research.
Jack Black was also in that movie.
For the sake of science.
Yeah, but that's a great example of a short story collection in which all the short stories tie together. And it almost operates as a novel because they're so tied together. It's great.
And I'm thinking of the wrong actress.
Yeah.
I feel like we should find this out for the sake of prosperity.
Juliana Moore.
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore?
Isn't it?
Julianne Moore. Yeah. Julianne Moore, I think. I think that's what it is.
My computer says it doesn't exist in this show. But
anyway,
I'll do some research and put it in the show notes. Sorry, guys. We failed in our memory. We did rapid fire a couple weeks ago.
Wait, are we doing a writing prompt?
So I was saying instead of rapid fire, we could do a writing prompt.
Okay.
Do you want to do that?
I had a couple thoughts, and some of them were... Most of them because I was on the way here and I started to think about traveling. And I did some travel writing in college, so I was thinking maybe a writing prompt could be describing a trip or, you know, a trip on any kind of medium of transportation that had some significance.
Like movement.
Movement through space, whether it be on your feet, on your bike, on a train, in a car. And not necessarily the point, you know, what they always say, it's not the destination, it's the journey, kind of embracing that idea. Not about where you were going, but what happened.
It's so cheesy, but it's true.
It's true.
The only moment you have is now. You don't even know if you're going to make your destination, honestly.
Exactly.
Live it up. Yeah. Live it up.
What do you say? Should we do that as a running prompt? I got some thoughts.
Cool. Yeah. Are you going to write your thoughts?
Hells yeah.
Okay. Let me find a song. Do you have a good writing song?
I mean, that one Watsky song I was talking about earlier, that's not necessarily a
writing
song.
Does that have lyrics?
It does have lyrics, so.
See, I feel like that's a like, negatory, because
yeah,
lyrics are.
I always like, was it Bitches Brew?
I've never heard
Davis
of this.
Who is that?
Hold on. Chris.
Or Jessica by the Allman Brothers. That's a great song.
Okay. We're going to do this. Whoa. Maybe. This might be the worst.
Uh-oh.
Please, if you haven't found a pencil, we are doing a writing prompt, and we're going to do a prompt for about 5 minutes. And we want you to write with us, and we're going to write traumatizing. And the prompt is writing about some sort of travel experience, transportation experience. Is that an accurate summation?
Sure, yeah.
Do you want to add anything to that?
Just keeping in mind that the journey is more important than the destination.
That's keep cliches in mind as you are writing for the next couple minutes. I hope you do grab a pencil and join us in this, because it'll be fun. And then send us what you wrote, because that's cool too.
Absolutely.
Here we go. Say there's about 10 seconds left. Whatever thought you're holding, wrap that up. Find a place for a period. Or what are those It's not an ellipses. Those three dots? Ellipses. Oh, thank you. If you need to do an ellipses and continue after the show, that's cool too. Cool. We're gonna fade out. How'd it go? We don't have time to read, honestly. We have 1 minute to wrap up my show.
I'll email it to you.
So email me, post your thoughts. That'd be really cool. But the prompt was writing about a time that you were traveling, moving. Yeah. And this is Ink and Worm. You've been listening on Radio Free Brooklyn. Again, catch the podcast. We're on all the things, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom. Surely you can find a way to listen to us and let me know what you think. Do you have any last thoughts, my dear friend Lawrence?
Just thank you for having me on again. And just wait. We're gonna show the world all about Inspector Pynchon one day.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun time.
Absolutely.
Cool. Thanks for listening. Catch you later.